the Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creators of the Bionic Studio, the smarter way to make radio.
We're back at the elegant facilities of Guilt Free Studios in London's Soho. It's time for the December roundtable, and let's see who is round it.
Hello, I'm Steve Ackerman, the Managing Director of Something Else.
Nice to see you, Steve.
I'm Paul Chandler. I'm a radio consultant and I'm a media law expert. I'm involved in two stations, Fix Radio for builders and tradespeople and a new one called Podcast Radio.
And you are a luminary.
A luminary.
I heard you described earlier as a radio luminary.
Oh,
so,
wow.
So well done, Paul.
I'm impressed.
And on my immediate left.
Hi, I'm Suchandrika Chakrabarty. I'm a freelancer and host of the podcast Freelance Pod.
It's very good to have you all here, and I'd like, if I could, to start with the Audio Production Awards, which Steve and Suchandrika were at, so was I. A very positive vibe in the room.
Yeah, I thought it felt a really positive evening. There was a great spread of winners in terms of different faces, different genders, different types of programme makers. So that felt really good, I think. I think there was a really sort of positive vibe in the room. And I was interested to note that, as opposed to last year, this year it seemed to me that the vast majority of nominees were actually part of independent production companies or broadcasters, as opposed to, I think, some of the previous years where they'd been quite a lot of freelancers. And that, to me, maybe that had an impact on the sort of vibe in the room.
A lot of the freelancers, of course, are people who might work for you today, but they might work for the BBC tomorrow and they might work for Listen or Seven Digital a week on Thursday. It's a very flexible labour market now, isn't it?
It is a very flexible labour market, and I think particularly podcasting has obviously exacerbated that, because clearly it's very democratic and there's the ability for anybody to really produce something if they feel passionate enough about it. And so I think maybe what we've seen in previous years are some of those freelancers who are at that sort of more democratic end, as opposed to maybe people who've got a bit of experience and do tend to work for a number of different companies. And, you know, clearly, look, both forms of work are completely valid. But I suppose the most exciting thing about it was just that this is a fantastic time for audio, and it's great to see a really, really thriving independent industry creating radio and podcasts in all different forms.
So last year, Suchandrika, there was a bit of pushback from some people who said, well, it was a bit pale, male and stale. And speaking as somebody who represents all three of those, I can say that this year it was quite a bit different. I think that is part of what gave it that energy, isn't it, in the room?
It was so interesting. I saw the emails afterwards. I wasn't at the event last year, but there were emails suggesting that there could be more diversity in the winners. And then in 1 year, there is such a lot of change, which is really interesting that it could happen so quickly. I think it goes to show that if we start talking about these issues, companies might start thinking about who they promote in terms of who should be going up for awards. And hopefully it gives people the courage as well and to think, you know, maybe I should put myself forward. I think if you can't see someone like yourself up there, then maybe you think it's not for me. And so this could change things a bit. But in 1 year, that much change is absolutely fascinating.
I think that's a great point, actually, about, you know, the point you just made about companies deciding. Because I know, actually, we absolutely, as a response to last year, our policy this year was a 50-50 policy. So we said we will make sure that all the entries we put in are 50-50 in terms of male-female representation. And that did mean that we did go to some of our producers and say, who hadn't put themselves forward, and say, look, we really want to enter you. And I'm sure other people did exactly the same. And I know there was also a big move on the judges, wasn't there, to find more diverse judges, and clearly that then also has an implication on what sorts of things are deemed as award winners.
Well, I think it's fair to say that Audio UK, and full disclosure, I'm on its board, but we did try this year by using Leanne, who's a consultant in that area, as she was on the Podcast Awards, to try and say, if we broaden the range of judges, we might then broaden the range of winners. And I think that did happen.
So I think what Steve said was really important, that if you mention to someone, maybe you should apply. That can change everything. I think for a lot of people, especially as a freelancer, you don't always get a lot of feedback. You might only hear if there was a small mistake. That's what editorial is. It's take it back and make it better. And so to have someone say, oh, you're really good, we really enjoyed that, can you enter? I think that would be really meaningful, to make sure you're asking lots of different people, come on, let's get everyone entering.
Do you think that the ARIAs is going to be the same?
Well, that'll be an interesting challenge for the Radio Academy. I mean, as you probably know, they were planning to have it at pretty much the same time as the APAs, and they did rightly, in my view, decide that they had to postpone it. So that means there hasn't been Radio Academy Awards in 2019. Next year it's going to be in March and it's going to be at the Palladium. To me, that feels a bit heritage.
Well, maybe just in terms of its name, but I think the fact that they're holding an awards at a large, prestigious venue, if it can be filled, then that should lead itself to, obviously, hopefully a really exciting night.
I suppose what's interesting for them as well is there any possibility they can get 50% of commercial radio to join in? So will Global enter this year? I mean, we're not hearing that they will, and you're shaking your head, Paul.
Well, I'm a judge, and certainly in one of the categories I'm judging, no Global entries.
No. Well, some would say that's a pity, and that the...
I would, definitely. They should step up and take part and be a part of the industry.
If you were one of those people who used to go to the Sony Awards and sat downstairs in the Grosvenor House and thought, I don't really want to be part of this because it's all a bit establishment and, you know, old men in ties, you would not think that about this industry. If you'd gone to the APAs, you'd have thought, wow, this is really, you know, this is cutting-edge, creative, artistic environment.
It felt very vibrant, and I think in a way, maybe that does encapsulate the difference between the sort of podcasting and a new form of audio that's emerging and maybe the more established commercial radio or well, you know, it's unfair to say commercial radio, but more established radio programme making that's taking place. You know, podcasting absolutely does allow in a wider array of voices, and that was absolutely reflected on the night of the APAs.
OK, well, the big thing that's dominating everybody's minds, of course, even if it's only trying to find a way to escape from it, is the general election, and I make no apologies for talking about it. Paul, you do classes, basically, for people. You're an expert on how we should cover politics, and particularly at election times.
Well, as part of the general election this year, Diva Webb and myself produced a downloadable thing from the website.
And very good it is, too.
As a guide for just how radio stations should report things that are going on with the election.
Some of that is kind of pretty dull, but it's got to be done. It's got to be done properly.
It's all about balance and fairness and impartiality.
So you listen to a lot of radio stations, BBC and commercial. What are you feeling this year in terms of how radio journalism is performing?
I think the big difference, and I've just been reading John Humphrey's book, which came out a few weeks ago, and he makes this point
as well.
Going
to have to hurry you.
Exactly, yeah. His point is that so many politicians have been very well media trained, and that, of course, leads to a frustration from journalists and presenters, because all the time, and you see this every day and hear it every day, politicians avoid the questions, and they have so many techniques that have been taught to them to avoid answering a specific question, and that leads to frustration among presenters, journalists, and I would suggest listeners. And that's a sad thing.
You might be one of the people who does some of this media training.
I'm not. I would never claim to do that. I actually don't do that. I've never done media training. I'd like to sort of experience it.
But you are.
I can avoid some of your questions, yeah. Trevor.
But you do hear it, don't you?
Yes.
Sir Chandrika, when you're listening to a radio interview with a particular party representative, you know that they're going to say, get Brexit done. Just as 2 years ago they said, strong and stable. They've been given these kind of words to say on their WhatsApp group.
I think also if you get these politicians getting media training, it's probably from the people who have been made redundant from that radio station or newspaper, if it's print or wherever it is, a couple of years ago. So it's also about that sort of ever-declining circle of get made redundant, become a freelancer, start training people. So internally, people have got to change their game and start questioning politicians a different way, start thinking about the politician's entire personal brand, such as it is online, start finding other ways to get to them, maybe something less confrontational will draw something better out.
Well, that is interesting, isn't it? Is the long-form interview a way that you do find out more rather than the short-form, going to have to hurry you, we're running out of time interview, which we all hear a lot of, which never seems to get us anywhere? I mean, my favourite example of this is a Nick Robinson interview on Radio 4 usually it doesn't tell you a great deal. But a Nick Robinson interview on his own podcast on political thinking often reveals all sorts of stuff about the people he's talking to. Do you agree with that, Steve?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, again, that really, I think, goes to the heart of one of the pluses of podcasting, just in the sense of, obviously, you're not limited by time. You can be as frequent as you want. I mean, funnily enough, I think one of the hallmarks of this election is that you can, in a different way, you see a number of podcasts that are kind of able to do the same thing, where they can take their time to explore an issue. So people like the FT and The Guardian, you know, releasing weekly or maybe two or three times a week podcasts where they can examine an issue in quite depth and also step back from it. So look at it two or three days later, rather than that sort of news cycle. And that obviously gives you a completely different feel.
And of course, it's worth remembering that podcasts aren't governed by any kind of rules set up by Ofcom in order to ensure balance or fairness or impartiality. So they can actually be quite opinionated. And that's one of the great things about podcasts. You can almost say what you like as long as it's within the law.
Well, I was going to ask you about this. If the Prime Minister, for the sake of example, goes on your radio show and says, "Our Queen's speech was not passed when it was," that is a lie. Is it legitimate for us as journalist presenters to say, "Hang on, that's a lie"?
Of course. Why wouldn't it be?
Well, because we don't, do we?
I think the one of the reasons is that in the heat of the moment, a journalist or a presenter isn't necessarily able to sort of access what's been said by a politician in the past. It's usually things like, I know the Today Show on Radio 4 has a fact checker and they do an interview with him at 10 to 9 every day. And it's at that point that you can extract what is and what isn't a lie or a truth.
But I wonder if it's because we have been brought up to think that civil discourse needs to be polite. So we don't say, "Actually, matey, that's a complete fib." We say, "Yes, but on the other hand, you know, you were quoted." You know, we kind of pull back and it's all done with the greatest possible respect and all those kind of phrases.
Well, I think tell that to John Humphreys or tell that to Nick Robinson, and I think they'd probably disagree. Or Eddie Mayer certainly would, who does some extremely forensic interviews with politicians, where he does try and catch out lies and untruths and things that aren't quite right. But it's not necessarily available to everyone at that moment when the interview is taking place. It's only after that that a fact check can be run.
What do you think of the way that these issues, which are obviously quite complicated, are covered in Sky News for commercial radio, or the kind of tiny minute and a half, 2 minute bulletins that we use? Is that a useful way of trying to encapsulate those big stories for people?
I think it is, and it's difficult. I've always said that, and I always say this if I do any training, that it's far difficult to write a tight 2 minute bulletin than it is to write a sort of a 5-10 minute package to explain something. And so trying to encapsulate what's been said as a news story that goes on those bulletins is a difficult task, but I think it's obviously a necessary one, but there you don't have the space to go into the rights and wrongs. It's simply a reporting process.
And you mentioned the rules that govern reporting in media, in broadcast media, which don't apply in podcasting or in the press. Do you think it would be helpful, Steve, if we had a few more kind of Sean Hannitys and, you know, we had a bit more opinion on the radio?
That's an interesting question, isn't it? I mean, we certainly obviously have that within the podcast space. Maybe one can argue we are starting to get there on the radio, obviously with people like Nigel Farage.
James O'Brien, of course.
James O'Brien, the other way, Ferrari, you know, is definitely pushing it. You know, you could say it's something actually the BBC has sort of kind of been caught out on a bit. I mean, you know, when you look at what LBC has done, it's actually really impressive.
Absolutely.
You know, it is impressive. At the same time, you know, I do feel a little bit uncomfortable when you hear some shows that are basically on the radio doing what social media does, which is that echo chamber of just a particular worldview being repeated.
I just wish we could do more head-to-heads with radio presenters on LBC, like James O'Brien versus Eddie Mayer. I don't know. Just having James O'Brien versus Nigel Farage, I would pay good money to see that. That would
be amazing. As a boxing fight or as a radio show?
It would be a radio show that turned into a boxing fight, I'm sure.
All right. Thank you very much for that. This is the December edition of the Radio Today Roundtable. We'll pause for a commercial.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creators of the Bionics Studio. Listening, watching, reacting to and learning from every spoken word, caller, tweet and SMS to unmix, unlock and understand your content. The Bionics Studio transforms everything about radio except the way you make it.
Radio Today. So Chandrika Chakrabarty is here, so is Steve Ackerman, and so is Paul Chandler. I'm Trevor Dan. Let's discuss now podcast radio, because we've discussed radio and podcasting. I wonder if there'll ever be a radio station that plays podcasts. Oh, here's somebody who's just launched one.
And before the recording, you said, what a bizarre concept. So let's say that first of all. Let me explain. Podcast radio will be launching in January on DAB Plus in London. It'll play podcasts 24 hours a day. From the listener's point of view, it's all about discovery and sampling podcasts. From a podcaster's point of view, it's all a shop window and it's an opportunity to showcase what people do. I think radio is a great way to talk about and to publicise podcasts. We're going to have a pod jock. Do you like that? It's
No,
you don't. I knew you wouldn't, Trevor. It's a cross between a DJ and a continuity announcer. They'll link the podcasts. They'll do reviews. They'll do interviews with creators and they'll do charts and things like that.
Okay, so the thing we know about podcasting is that it's niche. The thing we know about broadcasting is it isn't. So do I want an aggregator of podcasts from all over the place? Or are you going to say, actually, this is a station for under 25s or over 45 women, or, you know, you're going to have a particular audience in mind?
No, I think we're going to be an aggregator. I think that there are 800,000 live podcasts out there. People are desperate to find a trusted voice that they can go to for recommendations. And, you know, I think from my conversations with podcasters, I don't know about these two guys, but, you know, it's difficult to get discovery from people if you don't get a write-up by Miranda Sawyer or in the Sunday Times or what have you. It's very difficult for people to get what to listen to. So our venture is simply an opportunity to tackle that problem.
So, Chandrika, do you want to be on it?
Yeah, I think it's a good idea. I'm up for that.
Done. Deal.
Yeah.
Excellent. And will she get paid?
No. It's a promotional thing. Okay. Steve and I have already had this conversation.
Yes. Right. Steve, you're, I think it's polite to call you an entrepreneur.
Oh, thank you, Trevor.
Why are they doing this?
Well, as Paul said, we've already had the conversation where he said, come here for one of your podcasts. And I said, are you paying us? He said, no. I said, well, then you can't have it.
Exactly. It was all very polite, though. It was all very polite.
Well, it's always polite. I mean, I can understand in one sense what Paul's saying in terms of discoverability. That is still an issue for podcasting. As a radio station, it definitely feels slightly anti-intuitive in the sense of, obviously, the point about podcasting is it's on demand. And so do I think lots of people are going to sort of turn on hoping to sort of find a podcast? I'm just not quite sure, because I'm just not sure that is the pattern of behaviour of podcast listening. And even though discoverability is still poor, certainly compared to on-demand TV, you know, to Netflix and Amazon Prime, it is still better than if you try and find a radio show that's of interest for you. I mean, even trying to find something on BBC Sounds of anything that's been broadcast on BBC Radio, almost impossible to find a good way to discover something. Whereas, you know, I can go to Apple or Spotify, look up a genre I like, and I can find top-performing podcasts in that genre and go and give them a listen.
You know, that's our challenge, to make it an engaging entertaining listen, which is why we've created the pod jock, Trevor. To
doesn't
actually
get any better with repetition.
I know, sorry about that. But the PJ,
it's getting worse again.
It's getting even worse, isn't it?
Quit while you're ahead.
But to actually try and make the podcasts come together and be linked together with a common theme, and that's a big challenge for us, and we don't underestimate that. And I take what Steve says, and I understand what he says.
But so you didn't answer my question about who it's aimed at.
We're not aiming at a specific demographic. It's like BBC One or like Radio 4 or like it's a station which will provide a whole variety of different listens.
I don't think my friend, the consultant Paul Chandler, would tell me that would work.
Well, yes, but we are going to theme it. Oh. So if you, for example, I always use the example of the Sunday Times, you have a home section, a travel section, a business section, a news section, blah, blah, blah. So there will be, the schedule will be built around themes, and we'll put different podcasts. We'll probably have a true crime one as well.
So what do we think of this other idea that we're hearing about, which is the BBC is thinking about applying for permission to launch brand extensions in an absolute radio style. So you might get Radio 1 hip hop, or you might get Radio 2 80s or something. Should they be allowed to do that?
I don't think the BBC should be in a position where they're duplicating successful commercial radio services. I'm sure the big radio groups, Wireless, Bauer and Global, would have something to say about that. And I'm sure Radio Centre would as well. And, you know, why are the BBC, when they're worried about over 75 licence fees and the money that's going to cost, why are they considering launching these type of brand extension stations?
You know? I imagine, Steve, you'd be up for it because your company would probably be making some of these services, wouldn't they?
Well, maybe, but, you know, if I step back from that, I mean, actually, the BBC has got a long history of doing this, haven't they? You know, you think back to the 90s and you think Talk Radio launched, and so they launched Five Live, you know, Sunrise Radio existed, so they launched the Asian Network. I mean, you know, the BBC has a long history in radio of not actually being great innovators. I just think the difference that's happened on the landscape now is that you've got some very big, powerful commercial radio companies, which you didn't have back then. And I think they are, you know, Global and Bauer. These are impressive businesses, and they're not going to stand for any nonsense, I think, if they see something that's going to threaten them.
It's interesting that the BBC aren't innovators, that the commercial radio side have to become innovators because they can see the money coming in or going out. If they're not innovators, it's probably because they don't think about figures and money.
They have, of course, done this for years. I had to give evidence once at a Commons Committee, and I got a very nasty response to my evidence from a senior member of the BBC, who took me to task for saying that the commercial radio people had always innovated. And I use as an example the reading out of the football results, because the BBC would never do this before the war, but Radio Luxembourg and Radio Normandy did. So in the 1930s, that was how you found out who'd won the games and, who, more to the point, who'd drawn them, so you could mark off your pools coupon. So that's why, for many years, the BBC stuck with doing that, and also reading out horse racing results, which you also would think, that's an odd thing for the corporation to do. But no, they've always been influenced by that. The biggest story, of course, being 60s pirate radio. So it does feel a bit like, oh, there's some tanks on our lawn, we'll go and put some of ours on theirs.
I think if there's an area I'd like to see the BBC try and launch something new in, when you think that it's a public service broadcaster, is really in the children's area. You know, that has been the one, and, you know, I'm sure Matt Deegan and Folder Media won't thank me for that, but when you think about public service, that is the one area where surely there should be something created by the BBC.
And possibly for old people. I speak as one.
As Radio 2 moves
as
younger,
Radio
yeah.
2
yeah.
Increasingly is playing records for my children. I'm thinking, where's a radio station run by the BBC that plays something for, I'm going to call me the elderly, but you know what I mean?
As part of the same demographic, with my proudly held senior citizens rail card, which I used for the first time the other day, yes, I totally agree with you.
There you are. So more for the children and more for the crumblies.
Evergreens and lollipops,
that's
I think.
That's what we want from the BBC. Yeah. We'll find out what our distinguished guests have been listening to after this.
Yes, back with the Radio Today Roundtable in a minute. First, a script read from our friends at CleanFeed. It's a great thing to try out over the festive period if perhaps your presenter needs to be in a different place to usual to present their show live, or maybe you've got some last-minute Christmas OBs on the horizon and you haven't yet sorted out the technicals. CleanFeed has been designed for people who work in radio and for podcasters as well, and it's really simple to connect live, decent quality audio just using your browser. To do that OB or an interview for your show, or maybe co-hosting from somewhere different to normal. CleanFeed won't cost you anything to get started. It'll just take you 30 seconds to sign up, and within minutes you'll be doing your first live interview or recording. Find out more about it at cleanfeed.net.
Original music for this podcast was composed by Mikasa.
Steve Ackerman, Paul Chandler, Sachandrika Chakrabarty, and your pod jock for the day, Trevor Dan. We're here doing the December roundtable for Radio Today, and we're going to find out what everybody's been listening to. Two choices. Let's start with your first, Sachandrika.
So I've been listening to a podcast by Transport for All. It's hosted by Katie Pennick, who's just left Fresh Air Productions.
Who were big winners, weren't they?
Huge
at the
winners.
APAs, yeah.
The production company of the year won gold last week. She did have to be lifted onto stage because there wasn't a ramp at the BFI.
Is that the theme of this podcast?
It's Katie, I think, has become quite well known and got on BBC News from talking about on Twitter how buses would just go past her. Obviously, she's been holding down a job. She has a career. And it did make me think, how do you do that if you use a wheelchair in London? How do you hold down a whole career? She started this podcast, she's hosting it. She speaks to another person who uses a wheelchair and takes them on a journey across London with all the associated problems that they face, things that we probably wouldn't think about. And then they go for a swift half pint at the end of it, which they really deserve. And the first person she speaks to, episode one's just gone out, and it's Mick Silver, who's a journalist, broadcaster. He said, born in the 60s, moulded by the 80s. And it's when you get to the really deep, important stories, he talks about having felt very low in his life, his spine shattered at one point, and that's when he started using a wheelchair. And he never thought he'd get married or have a family or have a life, really. And you just don't hear these stories many other places.
I'm Katie Pennick, and this is How We Got Here, the new podcast from leading disability rights charity Transport for All. Every episode, I'll be chatting to a disabled person while making a journey on public transport. What could possibly go wrong? En route, they're going to share with me stories from their life, what they've learned, their activism, and I'll learn how things have changed for disabled people in the UK, and just how far there is to go.
I sort of gone to request assistance, and I overheard one member of staff say to the other, "She's the one who tweets." Brilliant.
It is actually a lot like whack-a-mole here, in that you wheel along and you have no guarantee that at any point you won't actually get someone land on your lap.
People tend, because of my age, to want to protect me more. Once they get to know me, they realise that I'm a feisty, bolshy old git.
I just want disabled people to have the same miserable experience of commuting as everyone else.
I think that was a moment where I realised that actually it's going to be all right. And I think my life has been a succession of those.
Paul Chandler, you're first.
I'm going to pick a radio show for...
My word, how controversial.
I know, it's terrible, isn't it? The Radio Today podcast picking a radio show. But this is Jack FM in Oxford, a very local station, very creative. They've won lots of awards in the past. And their breakfast show is called The Morning Glory with Trev and Rich. And they were approached by Jury's In. See, I've got the branding wrong.
That obviously worked then.
Obviously worked. Jury's In to do a promotion, and they turned the Morning Glory into the Snoring Glory. They did a 12-hour live broadcast overnight from 9 p.m. to 9 a.m. They were in their pyjamas in the hotel reception, in a bed. DJs in PJs was what they were talking
That's
about.
That's the second mention of PJs on this pod.
You're having a lovely time together today, aren't you?
It was wonderful. It was really interactive. They did some X-rated stuff after midnight. They did some really funny things. And it occurred to me, the winners here, everyone, Jury's In for the promotion, the radio station because they earned some revenue from it, and the listeners because it was really interactive and really local. I thought it was excellent.
What's the weirdest thing you've stayed up all night long for? Definitely parties.
Parties?
All the time.
When I was a kid, grew up not too far away from here in West London, in Richmond, and when we were about sort of 17, 18, we stayed up all night long and kept in parks. We weren't
you
drinking.
Slept in parks?
We slept in parks, just because we could, on playground equipment. I remember the witch's hat, a very famous, you know, in playgrounds,
yeah,
the witch's
yeah.
hat. Used to sleep under there.
You used to do that on your own, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. Well, no, we're three mates.
Three mates?
Me, Ivor, and Eddie, and Jamie.
Wow.
Every Friday night for about 6 months. The weirdest thing.
That is genuinely weird. The oddest thing that's ever come out of your mouth.
So what's the weirdest thing you've stayed up for? You can win a meal for two with wine at Marco's here at Jury's.
Speaking of which...
What?
I've got to go.
Why?
Well, I thought we're here for a long time.
Yes.
Going to need some tucker.
Yeah.
I booked myself into the restaurant. So anyway, I've literally, my reservation's in like 5 minutes.
What, so you're going to leave me already at 10 past 9, 10 minutes into our all-night long show?
That's Jack FM snoring. Steve Ackerman, you're first.
So my first is one of the things that I think you are able to do in the podcast space really well is obviously take the time to explore an issue in depth. And there's a new podcast out which I've heard the first episode of and I just thought was really fascinating. It's Ronan Farrow, who's one of the journalists who broke the Harvey Weinstein story. He was writing for The New Yorker, and the podcast is called Catch and Kill, which is the same as his book he's got out. But the nice angle he's taken on it is it does tread the boards on the story of the Weinstein case, but it's really, its angle is to look at the networks that protect men like Weinstein. So the first episode is about the Mossad operatives who were stalking Ronan Farrow at the behest of Harvey Weinstein. It's a great listen. I'm looking forward to hearing the rest of the series.
What happened next felt like I was in a John le Carré novel or something. We agreed to meet at a Brazilian restaurant in Manhattan, but when I got there, this person didn't show. Instead, my phone rang. The caller ID said Axiom again. It was a man with what sounded like it might be a Russian accent. He told me what I was wearing and said he needed to make sure that we weren't being followed. He instructed me to leave the restaurant, walk against traffic for several blocks, and then sit down in the back of a different restaurant. That was when I first met Igor Ostrovsky, a private investigator who'd been following me, watching me, for weeks. This guy.
I didn't think I was going to be followed, but I thought you might be, so just in case... We had to take some steps to avoid being seen together.
That's Ronan Farrow. And it's interesting, isn't it, that that kind of journalism where you, the journalist, are part of the story was something we were all told not to do in broadcasting. You know, that was one of the rules, which is you are not the story. You withdraw from that and you just say what the facts are. And your next choice, Paul, is going to be the Dimbleby Sun King, which is made by Steve's company. It's another example, and perhaps even more remarkable, because this is the great BBC voice, David Dimbleby, suddenly being liberated, one feels, and from that kind of BBC constraint.
And what a voice as well. Yes, the show produced, or it's a six-parter produced by Joe Sykes of something else, beautifully crafted. I'm not just saying that because Steve's sitting next to me, but beautifully crafted.
I think we can be sure that he had nothing to do with it.
Just
it's true.
just the right amount of music used beautifully. David Dimbleby does a fantastic job. I must admit, and I'll let you into a little secret here, that David Dimbleby is my sometime seat partner on the 9:07 a.m. from Polegate in Sussex up to London, Victoria, and we exchange pleasantries. And he's a very low-tech guy. He uses an old Nokia phone. He uses a spiral-bound notebook. He reads books and newspapers. So for me to hear he's doing a podcast, I thought, goodness me. But it is really superb. So I know you're a fan of this. This is the story
Rupert
of
Rupert Murdoch. Which is why it's called The Sun King.
The Sun King, and it's about... when he took over the Sun, it's about the Whopping dispute. And for anyone in the media, and I started in newspapers, and I still have that romance of newspapers in my head from the late 70s where you heard the presses going and they shook the building. I found it fascinating to get into the mind of Rupert Murdoch, who is now in our industry. He is the ultimate owner of Wireless Group, News UK, and he's now in the radio industry.
He is the Sun King.
Jules Stein is a famous Hollywood mogul from the 1920s and 1930s, and like all the moguls of that era, he built a mogul mansion on top of a hill up Benedict Canyon, way above the flat plains of Los Angeles Valley. And naturally, maybe inevitably, that's the house that Rupert Murdoch bought when he replanted himself in the United States in the late 1980s.
Reed had a meeting with Rupert Murdoch, the Australian media mogul who at the time was trying to establish a new television network in the US.
We had a lovely dinner. It was probably meat, probably red meat.
And as they're eating, Murdoch turns to Reed.
He said, have you ever been to London? I said, yes, I'd been to London. And he said, well, in your country, you don't have lots of different content for lots of different audiences. You just have this one vanilla, middle-of-the-road, try-to-please-everyone form of media. And that's the same as ABC, CBS, and NBC. They all are just imitators of each other. I said, okay, I get the difference. And he said, well, I'm going to take the British newsstand model, one newspaper for every niche audience, and I'm going to have that become the way the media industry in the United States is organized. And so I'm going to have a fourth broadcast network, and it would distinctly have its own unique audience.
And so the Fox network was born, came of age, and 22 years later, that network helped elect a president.
USA, USA, USA.
So my second one is a radio show. It's on the BBC, Radio 4 Extra, and it's Podcast Radio Hour with Amanda Litherland. And I was on the last episode, which went out last Friday, and the theme was live podcast shows.
So this is a radio service dedicated to podcasting. I've just been talking about that with Paul. Only this is a show, isn't it? Not an entire station. Do you think it works? They're quite long, the clips, aren't they?
They are quite long, so it's an hour-long show. And I think sometimes what we were saying before about podcasting, it is a storytelling medium, and sometimes you need quite a long clip to give a real sense of who I'm going to be spending time with if I listen to that podcast. I think it's really important to advertise a podcast with the audio and with a good sense of that storytelling person you've got there. So I pitched Amanda this idea about live shows because I've been doing quite a few. She's been doing some. I feel like it's where the industry is going next. And there's something really interesting about the relationship between the podcast host and the listener.
So this is about doing what, for instance, Jane and Fee have done with Fortunately, which is go out and do it in a theatre.
Yeah, and it's so interesting. I wrote my own shows to take your show, which is just audio, and think, well, the audience hasn't just come to listen to us. They've paid some money, they left the house for the evening. So what's visual and what's interactive? What can I give them back?
Here's a clip from the Podcast Radio Hour.
Hello, and welcome to Podcast Radio Hour with me, Amanda Litherland, where today we're going to be taking a look at podcast live shows. Loads of them are popping up at events and festivals around the country now, where you can see your favourite podcasters doing their thing in the flesh. We'll be asking some of those podcast hosts how they adapt their show into a live environment, such as Ben Partridge from the Beef and Dairy Network podcast.
I think you have to think of it as not really a podcast at all. It's like a show version. I sort of try and forget it's a podcast, really.
And we'll be speaking to the promoter Ollie Catchpole from Wave Festivals about what event organisers are looking for and what it is audiences really get out of the experience.
Branching on the kind of live comedy industry where people are taking a chance on things, and if we're presenting it well in a city that is surrounded by live culture, it gives them a good opportunity to try it for the first time, I think.
Steve Ackerman's final choice.
So my final choice is the official podcast for The Crown, which I have to declare we make. But the reason I wanted to speak about this, because I think it's really indicative of a rise of companion podcasts that we've seen in 2019. So what we saw in 2018 was lots of podcasts about TV shows and old TV shows, but it tended to be from fans who were speaking about the shows. And you've seen now the TV producers latching onto this and realising that they are sitting on additional content and obviously something that has marketing value. Chernobyl did it brilliantly earlier in the year, HBO, made by Pineapple Street out of Brooklyn. And for The Crown, we take a very similar approach. So we are speaking with the actors and actresses, but really the focal point of the podcast are the programme makers and the writer Peter Morgan. And if you're a fan of the programme, it's a way to really deep dive into it in a really significant way.
Here's a clip from The Crown.
Coming up later, we'll hear from actor Jason Watkins, who plays Prime Minister Harold Wilson. Jason speaks of Wilson's unexpected bond with the Queen, as well as his embarrassment over the economic downturn during his time in office.
as a rather brilliant economist, it hurt him doubly that he was unable to prop up the pound. And so it was a crisis of economics and a personal crisis. And he says that in the scene, you know, me personally.
We'll also hear from Head of Research Annie Salzberger, who will speak in detail about the economic situation in the UK in 1967, as well as the evolving powers of the Crown.
She could free all prisoners if she wanted to. She could disband the army. But she can't, because the minute she does that, it's no longer democracy.
As it's coming up to Christmas, I'm going to give myself a little present, and I'm going to pick something. My favourite podcast of this year might possibly be edged by The Sun King, but probably not, is Dolly Parton's America. I don't know whether any of you have heard this. This is Jad Abumrad's programme series about, well, it's loosely about Dolly Parton, but it's really about Jad. It's about his family, isn't it? And it's just a beautifully put together work, as you would expect from somebody from his Radiolab background.
I couldn't shake this feeling like I had been here before. Like it was something like deja vu, but not quite. Maybe more like a rhyme, the way that one memory rhymes with another. When my producer Shima came and got me and was like, "What the hell, man? Let's go." I mentioned it to her.
Do you want to know something crazy that I was thinking about? Driving up here, it's exactly the feeling of driving up to my dad's old village in the mountains of Lebanon.
Oh my God.
These tiny little streets.
The memory that kept intruding was from almost exactly 20 years earlier. I'd gone to Lebanon with my dad for a wedding. This is when I was just getting into recording, so I had my recorder with me everywhere I went. And the day after the wedding, my dad had driven us up the mountains to show us the village where he was born and raised. A little village called Wadi Shahrua. This little enclave where literally half the village has our last name. It's high up in the mountains, actually the exact same elevation as the mountain where Dolly lives. The air sort of has that exact same kind of thinness to it. And when we finally got to see his house, it looked a lot like Dolly.
When I saw her house,
I told him about it later.
It reminded me instantly of your house, Wadi.
It's almost identical like Dolly.
Tell me who you are, just so I have your introduction.
What do you mean? I'm Naji Abumrad. I'm your father.
And what do you do when you're, what do you do otherwise?
Right now, I'm a professor of surgery at Vanderbilt, and I
didn't expect to want to put an interview with my dad in an episode about a visit to Dolly's Tennessee mountain home.
That's Dolly Parton's America, and that's just about it. We will be back in January with another roundtable. So in the meantime, happy Christmas. Anybody got any other business before we go, Steve?
Not from me.
Anything else you'd like to say apart from happy Christmas?
Happy Christmas, happy holidays to all listening.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays, and tune into podcast radio in the new year. The pod jocks.
We'll take that advert out. And
happy holidays, have a good one.
Radio Romance, David Boyd. 80s music has been powerful weaponry for UK radio. Beyond its original life, it sustained a generation of AC formats and is now a popular format in its own right. It's 10 years this week since Absolute Radio closed the Extreme spin-off in London and launched Absolute 80s, targeted at reluctant adults.
How does this make you feel? Good? Would you like to feel this all the time? Then get ready for Absolute 80s, the UK's only all-80s radio station. Launches this morning on DAB in London or at absolute80s.com.
Happy 10th birthday, Absolute 80s. At the time, Campaign magazine reported that Absolute Radio has not ruled out launching further digital stations. 80s was launched originally online and in London on DAB, but then...
You may have heard that Absolute 80s is now not just available in London on DAB digital radio, but also right across the entire United Kingdom. You're probably going to need to retune your radio, and here's how. At the moment, you might have noticed that where it used to say Absolute 80s on your dial, it now says Absolute 80s Temp. If that's what you see, then it's time to retune, and it's really easy. Of course, every radio set is slightly different, but in general...
Now you're talking. Mind you, with audiences these days of 1.8 million, seems like folk found it. It's always good to look back to the early signs of things that are now commonplace, maximising audiences by making the most of your frequencies and differentiation.
You're listening to test transmissions for Britain's newest commercial radio station. Power FM, with new people... New programs and more music will start broadcasting on this frequency. Keep listening for the sound of the 90s.
On the South Coast in the 80s, the only FM transmitters for Portsmouth and Southampton then were operated by Ocean Sound, and they had a decent overlap in coverage, so they split them, leaving Ocean and a new Light FM on the one hand and creating a thrusting new Power FM on the other.
You've listened for the sound of things to come. Now it's here. Music radio for the 90s. Power FM, with new people, new programs, and great music. While the others are talking, we're rocking 24 hours a day, every day, on 103.2.
Power FM. Power FM, launching on the South Coast 31 years ago. And Power was famously to be an early home for little Scott Mills.
We start a new week of In Session with a male solo singer from Bournemouth who is about to be quite big. He got his first signing with EMI Records when he was 17.
Happy birthday, Power. Later Galaxy, now Capital. And Galaxy was very nearly the name given to the slickest of the offshore pirate stations in the 60s. Instead, it became Radio London, and that station began test transmissions this week in 1964 from a ship called the MV Galaxy.
Radio London.
22 and a half minutes past 11 o'clock, and you're hearing right now the things which come from Radio London's classic library, the classic tunes which have made and sold a million. Bobby Darin's the voice, and the title, The Queen of the Hop. That was a golden hit from the past, one of Radio London's classic titles, Bobby Darin singing The Queen of the Hop. Now we're about to hear a lovely little title, a plaintive tune from Little Anthony.
The tentative early steps in advance of the launch proper of the offshore pirate Radio London this week, 55 years ago, and that station was to be the inspiration for Radio 1. Can it really be 7 years since the prank call that almost ended all prank calls? A call from Today FM in Sydney to the Duchess of Cambridge, treated in hospital in London.
This condition that she has is often attached to women that are having twins. So maybe not one, but two royal babies.
I would rather pump out a couple at a time. Makes it easier,
You make
I think.
It sound so special and emotional. I'd rather pump out a couple. That'd be all right, wouldn't it? Have someone in the corner of the room with a baseball mitt catching them. Yeah, pump them out. Here's the thing. We've been handed a phone number, all right? And we have been told that this phone number is the hospital where Kate Middleton is currently staying. Now, we thought we'd give it a call. We don't want to cause any trouble. Yeah. We don't want to stress her out because she's doing it tough.
Yeah.
But I reckon we can maybe get her on the radio tonight.
Look, I don't know. I mean, everybody would be trying
Well, this is why I thought of a plan.
The call which began a sequence of events which ended in tragedy this week in 2012. Next week sees another general election, and it was this week in 1923 that we had the very first proper UK radio election coverage. It was also the last time we had a December election before the current one. At the time, a Conservative Prime Minister wanted to strengthen his grip, but Liberals and Labour produced a hung parliament.
Results came through quickly, and from Broadcasting House, headquarters of the BBC, they were radiated to millions of listeners at home and abroad. Behind the scenes in the studio, the announcer came to the microphone at close intervals to put the news on the air.
Here are some more election results.
Kingston on 10.
Rather, stayed up to learn if the country was going to be saved or was going on as usual.
Elected.
Robert paused before the conveniently open window and heard that the government was doing nicely.
939.
Sailors at Chatham ignored lights out to listen in.
Conservative.
Theoretically, the Navy has no politics. But Jack has a strong bias for whatever party puts a bigger Navy prominently in its program. This humble citizen coaxed a cat's whisker and listened in without neglecting to mind his hole in the road. A triumph of citizenship over circumstances.
And that program continued until one in the morning. We had further elections in 1924, and 1924 saw the first party political broadcast too. Back then, the results were just between items in a music program, and it wasn't until 1931 that we had a separate program just for election coverage. And that was highlighted on the cover of the Radio Times, but they still played a bit of ABBA when there weren't any results coming in. John Reith, who was in charge back then, wasn't keen on politics. He said it was the cringing pursuit of popularity, and he also thought it a potentially dangerous subject for the corporation to cover. So, with Gary Davis making his Radio 1 debut 37 years ago...
Really excellent, actually. Me exposing my medallion for all to see.
The death of Mike Allen from LBC and Capital 4 years ago...
But he's very well known, sadly no longer with us, and famous for many... quotes.
And an earthquake heard on air in Anchorage on KFQD this week last year.
Holy cow. Folks, I hope you're still with us. We'll get information on that just as soon as we possibly can.
Those are this week's Radio Moments.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.
Original music for this podcast was composed by Macassoid.